Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So beg for the blessings. All the disciples of Srila Prabhupada ask for your blessings by your sacrifice and your efforts in service to Srila Prabhupada. I also had some opportunity to learn about Prabhupada. Otherwise, there's no question. I was just going around looking for enjoyment. But now we know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shikshastakam prayers by all of your grace. So ask for your blessings. I can also mention we can send if anybody would like. Yeah. Okay. Also ask for the blessings of all the devotees who are assembled here. Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So just a little overview of what will be happening today. In our study of Shikshastakam, we're going to meet from 10 to 12 right now. Then there'll be a break, and then we'll conclude from 3 to 5. So anyone who can, and that's a lot of time, anyone who can come for both, that will be great. But also, there'll be an opportunity to hear this recording if you can't come to both. But things do build. So really, it kind of culminates in the next session from 3 to 5. Because every verse of Shikshastakam is a stage of bhakti. So we progress through the stages as we progress through the verses. I'll also pause at some times for some questions, certain moments. If some questions come up, if you have a pen, you can write them down. There was some handouts also. It's not a comprehensive outline of the presentation, but it's just some key verses that flow with the presentation. So there's some handouts, and if we run out, which we might, we can also send you that if you'd like that. You just let me know, and we'll send you a document where you can have those verses. So it's a recording, YouTube, also live recording. Okay. Yes. Also on YouTube, and will be posted on Facebook as well. And we're going to also do a little kirtan together, along with you. We're hearing about Sankirtan, the glories, so we'll also have some time to do a little chanting together. Because the best way to chant properly is when you first hear about chanting. Where the essence of our path is to hear and chant in the association of devotees. So sometimes we just start off with chanting, but the hearing is very good. We hear Nam Tattva, the truth of the name. We hear the glories of the name, and it builds faith, and then you begin chanting. You can bring that into your chanting. But if we don't hear about the holy name for a long time and just continue chanting, it tends to become something is missing, or some kind of focus may not be there. So, in my experience, chanting Krishna Nam, the name of Krishna, is something we have to keep returning to again and again. because it's a relationship. Some relationships, initially, they're enthusiastic and joyful, and they can also tend to, we can tend to lose that over time. Some relationships break. Some people may stop chanting. Some relationships, you may be able to maintain it for many years, but there's no life anymore in it. This is the nature of relationship. All these things are possible. Some relationships go deeper and deeper and deeper with time. Some relationships require some distance for some time. So all these scenarios are possible with our relationship with Nam Prabhu, the Holy Name. So you can ask, you can think of yourself right now and ask yourself, right now, what is my relationship with chanting the Holy Name? Yeah. It's sometimes said that our relationship with the Holy Name is our relationship with Krishna. And that can be frightening. That can be frightening, at least for myself, if that's really the essence of my relationship with Krishna. But the one good thing is that a real true lover, the lover who says, whatever my relationship is, whatever it may have been in the past, I return to you again. I want to hear about you again. I want to continue again. I keep returning to you. That's the true lover. Whatever it is, we may have stopped chanting for a long time, but that person who says, okay, well, now I want to return. I'm willing. What can I do to go a little deeper? Let me hear something again. Let me hear with fresh ears again. So whatever our relationship is with the Holy Name, just the fact that we're here and we're listening shows that we value this relationship. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that devotee who never gives up his Lord, how glorious is that devotee who never gives up his Lord? And how glorious is that Lord who also never lets go of his devotee? So if we keep again and again returning to the Holy Name, even as we struggle through chanting sometimes, dry times, or even stoppage, so many devotees, but I return, I come back again, I come back again. Let me hear something again. And eventually, actually Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a very touching story in this regard about the relationship with the Holy Name. And it's very relevant, I think, at least for me, maybe for you as well. But he says, imagine there's a wealthy landowner and you're working for that person. And so it's a good landowner. He's very good, and you're working hard, and the relationship is very nice. But with the landowner not always being around, then the worker, at one point, he misappropriates some of the funds and takes them for himself, secretly. So the landowner comes to find out what happened. And not with anger or resentment, but he tells the worker, I'm sorry, I have to let you go. You know, I had trust in you, and you broke that trust, so you cannot continue working here. So that worker goes away, and he's living his life. But then he starts to think, what did I do? Why did I do that? He was a good man. Everything I needed was provided for. Why did I do that? So this regret comes into his heart. And then he decides, I'm going to go back to that landowner and work for him. Again, now that doesn't work, right? If you get fired from a job and you just show up back at the job and say, I'm not gone yet, I'm working still. But he made a condition. He said, I'm going to go back and work for no pay. Think about that with chanting. No pay means maybe not much reciprocation is coming. Maybe no taste is there. But I'm going to go back and work. So he goes back to work for this landowner. Landowner's shocked. I'm not giving you anything. I don't care. I'm going to work for you. So he works week after week, month after month. Imagine if someone is doing this to you, right? Or some person who comes to serve you with no expectation, month after month. How long? Year after year. This person said, however long it takes, I'm just going to serve, even if you never give me anything. That consciousness, imagine, that landowner, after just some months, he was so touched in his heart. This person has proven themselves with no pay for so long. They keep working for me. Keep serving with no expectation. So that began to conquer the heart of the landowner. And he finally came back to the worker and said, oh, this is your devotion and sincerity. I trust you again fully. So I want to give you this job again, but also give you more. You have conquered my heart, more than what you had. Nice, touching example, because for chanting the holy name, we're kind of waiting for something sometimes very special to happen, and if it doesn't, we may struggle or give it up. But we keep returning again and again, and if we have that a similar vow, Krishna, however long it takes, whatever you want to do, whenever your mercy comes, but I'm going to continue serving you with no expectation. That will no doubt touch Krishna's heart at some point, and he will respond, and we'll hear how he responds in Shikshastakam, because the first verse are the seven effects of chanting. The first verse gives the seven effects of chanting, and also there's Nam Tattva there. It's important to hear Nam Tattva, the principles of the holy name, so we can really have a deep understanding for when we chant. The second verse, there's the first half of the second verse, there's more Nam Tattva, and then also the mood of chanting is the second verse. And in discussing that, we'll also see the main obstacle that comes up when we chant. And then the third verse of Shikshastakam is the life behavior that has to go along with the chanting for you to actually experience love from the chanting, love of God. So the first three verses really give us, they set us up for everything. Because after that, the other things that come, once the heart is clean and you've achieved a certain steadiness in chanting, and you're living with humility and tolerance, then the name begins to reveal itself. The name is always fully revealed, actually, but it's us that has to go through certain stages to realize the full glory of the name, the power of the name. So verses 1 through 3 take us on a journey to coming to a place of an open, receptive heart so that the full power of the name can transform our lives. And we'll hear of all the things that come along with that. So does that sound okay for a plan? Okay, so like I said, we'll also pause a few times for some questions or comments, and we'll also do a little chanting together as well. So the idea here is just to immerse ourselves in the vichar dada. Vichar dada. Dada means like a current. A current of the realizations and the conceptions of the acharyas. It's like, just imagine a flowing river. And there are many gifts that are offered to us, but we also have to enter that river, which means we have to absorb our mind in their realizations. There's two kinds of vichar, tattva vichar and rasa vichar. So vichar means like realization or deliberation. So tattva vichar, we want to absorb ourselves in the current of the realizations of the tattva of our acharyas, the truths. And also rasa vichar. Also in that current, if you enter this current and enter into the same mood of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, entering that same mood, then they have so many gifts to give. But those gifts are only available if we're in that current. As soon as you step out, then we're kind of on our own. That's why it's so important to really hear what Bhagavatam says, the comments of the acharyas, and enter in very deeply, because in that current is when the gifts come. Out of that current, we have to figure it out on our own. So the real Shakti is being linked to the Guru Parampara, Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. So the word Sampradaya, sam means completely. And pradaya means given. It means something that's completely given. So That's on their side. They completely are giving something. And then from our side, we have to learn what it means to completely receive it. Then it's sampradaya. If you have givers but no receivers, the sampradaya comes to an end. But if you have those who want to completely give, and also those who learn the art of completely receiving, then the sampradaya lives on. So this sampradaya, so what is the gift, first of all, that Lord Chaitanya is giving? Because it's very unique. There are other rivers, there are other currents, there are other sampradayas, there are other religions, and they're all giving something. So if you enter a different current, you can also get something on the spiritual path. From what those followers represent, what they embody, you will get that. If you become a Christian, who's the master is Jesus. If you enter that current, truly enter it, then you can get what he's offering. What was he offering? The conception of God as the Father. We are the children, he is the Father, service, dasya. So that's what you get, and that's really all you can get, because that's what he represents. What does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu represent? It is very unique. It is very wonderful. And being linked to him and his followers, his sampradaya, then we get this, what he has, and he wants to give what he has. So here's a nice verse, Krishna Das Kaviraj, in glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He reveals the gift that's being given. Chirad adatam nijagupta vitam sva prema namamrita atyudara apamaram yo vidatara gaura krishno janebhyas tamaham prapadye. I take shelter of that golden form of Sri Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came to give everyone nijagupta vitam. This is so nice. He came to give everybody the secret in his own heart, the hidden treasure in his own heart, which was not given for a very, very long time. How often does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come? Not every Kali Yuga. Once in every 1,000 Kali Yugas. Just like Krishna. So it's a very special thing he comes to give, which is not, it's very rare. What is it? A very intimate form of love of God. Very pure, very spontaneous, very sweet. Sweetness is the main characteristic of this love. Very intimate. Vraja Prem, the love of the residents of Vrindavan. So his Sankirtan is sometimes called Prem Sankirtan. It's just not ordinary kirtan. The other Kali Yugas, Sankirtan is always the method in Kali Yuga to return to God. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's form of kirtan is different. It's called Prem Sankirtan. It is the highest, most sweetest love, very intimate love. And he reveals, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals to Sanatana Goswami, what is the essence of God? What is the essence of Godhood? This is a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, from Madhya Lila, chapter 21, text 110. Madhurya Bhagavata Sar Vraje Kala Parachar Taha Shuka Vyasera Nandana Stane Stane Bhagavate Varniyache Janaite Taha Shuni Matta Bhaktagan. He tells Sanatana Goswami, Bhagavata Sar, the essence of Godhood, God's Godhood, Bhagavata, is the essence of him as God. What is it? Madhurya. It is his sweetness, actually. His very sweet, intimate love. You know, just like, it's the same for us, isn't it? We have jobs, we deal with so many people out there, but you come home into your inner family, and you're a little different, a little more open, things are a little more sweet. You have your wife, your husband, your children. That's who really sees your inner heart. Jai Srila Prabhupada. So that's true of us because it's true of God. Many people, the qualities they attribute to God, he's all-powerful. He's the controller. He's the source of everything. But all those names and conceptions of God are in relationship to us being down here, far away, who are suffering. And we just need some that's attractive to us. He's controlling everything. He's the Savior. He'll save me. He's all-powerful, right? Because this is a place of danger and of threat. And so those qualities of God become very important. But what if there's a place of no danger and no threat? You don't care if someone's all-powerful. There's no threat. There's no danger. You don't care, you know, if he's just the controller of everything. Everything's taken care of. Everything's safe. So in the spiritual world, there's no threat. There's no danger. So what becomes the most wonderful quality is not that he's all-powerful, that he controls everything. It becomes his sweet heart. The more and more you go into the intimacy of his sweetness is what becomes more and more wonderful. So the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is the revelation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The essence of God is actually the sweetness. It's like entering the inner family of God. Because all the other conceptions of God seem to be, there's little hints of the sweetness in other places, of course. But it's not the main focus. But all the other conceptions of God, it's because I'm down here and life is tough and I'm suffering and we need a savior, we need to be protected. So that's also important because that gets us started in realizing God and understanding God. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he goes straight to the sweetest aspects of God and wants to give that. So he says also, Nijaguda karya tomar prema asvadan anusange prema maya kaile tribuvan. So he personally came to taste this sweetness and also he wanted to give it to everybody. This verse says, my dear Lord, you have descended in this incarnation of Lord Chaitanya for your own personal reasons. You have come to taste your own spiritual bliss and at the same time you are transforming the whole world by spreading the ecstasy of love of Godhead. So now, this is the greatest mystery of all. This is the greatest mystery in the Vedas. How did he give this? All that sweetness that we're talking about, all the loveliness of Krishna, pure love, spontaneous love, how did he give it? Namamrita. He gave it in the form of a seed of the name. He gave it in seed form. So it's like if someone hands you one little seed, say someone gives you an apple seed, and they tell you, here, I'm giving you thousands of apples. Here's the seed. Do you have it or not? Who says we have it? Yes and no, right? You have it, but you don't have it. So all the glories of Krishna, all his energies are in the name, his name, his form. The name will actually, with time, reveal everything about Krishna. But it's a seed, just a name. You've been given one name which contains everything that will fulfill all your heart's desires if one learns how to chant it. So he gives all this madhurya, the sweetness of God, in a seed form as a name. And what does he say? By the way, this idea is not new in the Vedic literature. The power of sound, how a sound, Shabda Brahma, spiritual sound, it's like a seed. A one word is like a seed. And as we get purified, everything unfolds and actually contains so much more. So there's a verse from the Rig Veda. This is Rig Veda 1:156.3. And the rishis are praying to the Lord. So this is showing the same idea of what I'm explaining with Krishna Nam, but with the word Om. So these rishis, they're praying to the Lord. Om asya jananto namachit viviktana mahasti vishnu sumatim bhajamehe om tat sat. These rishis are saying, my dear Lord, we know hardly anything about you. We know about you, but we don't know you. Right? You can know about God, but to really know God face to face as a person or from realization. So we know something about you, but we don't really know you. But they say, how wonderful it is, though, that by nama chit viviktana, by simply repeating your name, we will attain perfect realization of you. So these sages in the Rig Veda, the same idea. How amazing is it? We don't really know you right now. We just know about you. But we know that if we keep saying your name, we'll have perfect and full realization of who you are. So this idea is found throughout the Vedic literatures. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't give some new idea that the seed name of Krishna contains Krishna. This is a deep principle. So Om is said to be also a name of God. And what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? I am Om. If Om becomes filled with rasa, then the name changes from Om to Krishna. Krishna is the rasik rupa. He's the rasa form of Om. Om is just a realization of God as Brahman. He pervades everything, pure spiritual energy. So that is one aspect of God. If that becomes filled with rasa, then the name is Krishna, the word is Krishna. So from chanting Om, you get Om. From chanting Krishna, you get Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Tapan Mishra, sadite sadite yaba preman kor. So take this seed name. Here's the seed name. Take it and chant it again and again. And prem ankur, the word ankur means it will sprout. A seed has to sprout. You think of a seed through time. First is a little seed in the right environment. It then has a little sprouting, first thing. The name also, it's said that the name, it will be by chanting, and as the consciousness becomes cleansed, there'll be a spurti. Spurti is the word. It means a bursting, a sprouting of that seed. And then a little bud comes, and then that also, something can sprout from that bud. And then a flower may come. So this stages of chanting. This is a nice example to remember. So I've been chanting, you know, we're chanting 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. Is it still just a seed in my heart? And if it is, why? That's the big question. That is the big question. Why has it not sprouted? So this is why the first three verses of Shikshastakam have been given, to address this. Why is it not sprouting? Because Krishnadas Kaviraj says, Bahu janma kare yade shravana kirtan, tabuta na paya Krishna pada premadan. You can chant for life after life after life and still no prema is coming. Why? Only one reason why. It's one reason. It's one thing. But there are many different expressions of that one thing. So here's the answer. Here's really the most important thing for us as devotees to focus on. Because if the name has everything and can reveal everything, but there's some obstacle, what is that obstacle and how to overcome it? Let me dedicate my life for that mission. So the one reason is given. So this is, you have to mark this verse, so important. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, 8th chapter, verses 29 and 30. Hena Krishna nama yadi laya bahubar, tabu yadi prema nahe, nahe ashudar. Tabe jani aparada tahata prachur, Krishna nama bija tahe nakare ankur. It ends with just what we were talking about, Krishna Nama Bija. The seed of the holy name, Taha Na Kare Ankur, it will not sprout into love if there is aparad, offense. So this is the thing. I'm chanting. Now, offense is a very deep subject. It's very psychological. Sometimes we hear of the 10 offenses to the name and they just seem like random instructions. Okay, demigods and the shastra and there's, you know, it seems like they're all disconnected. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's all one thing. It's all the expression of one thing. Those are 10 expressions of one deep-rooted aparad in the heart. So we want to explore this. And I'm starting with this because this is why Shikshastakam was given. So if we just start off hearing the verses, oh, that's nice. Someone's beautiful glorification of the name. But it really addresses the essence of what we need to do. So this is what Krishnadas Kaviraj says in these two verses. If one chants the exalted holy name of the Lord again and again, and yet his love for the Supreme Lord does not develop, and tears do not appear in his eyes, it is evident that because of his offense in chanting, the seed of the holy name of Krishna does not sprout. Srimad Bhagavatam says the same thing. It says, despite taking Harinam again and again, if there's no change taking place in the heart, then ashma saram hirdayam. It has to be concluded that the heart has become just too hard. Prabhupada says steel framed. If I'm chanting, the chanting can give so much sweetness and nectar and love, everything we're hankering for. But if it's not, there's a hardness in the heart. What is that? How do I address that? What to do? So it's contained in the word aparad. Appa means, it can mean down or against. And radha, aparada. So you can also, the acharyas say, this means against Radharani. But there are other also explanations. Because what does Radharani mean? What does radha mean? Aradhana is coming from this word to adore or to worship. Also, radha means pleasure or love. So something inside of us that is against love, something inside of us that is against giving pleasure to Krishna, worshiping Krishna, that one thing in the heart that doesn't want to do it. Aparada. Yeah. Aparada is not sins, by the way. That's a different word, pop. It's not like you struggle with some different sinful habits. That's not aparad. You can actually have sins and still chant without offense. Is that interesting? Yeah, the example that's given is Ajamil. Ajamil, think about his activities and his behavior. But it said when he chanted, he wasn't even referring to God, but he was chanting the name of his little son, Narayan. He was saying it again and again. Narayan, go to sleep. Narayan, eat this. Narayan, be quiet. Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. But, you know, he was not associating with Vaishnavas and offending them, and he didn't have this a certain heaviness. So even though he was sinful, there was a certain openness, also going back to his previous samskaras, how he grew up also as a devotee in some ways. So some of those previous things were coming back, or some of the sinful activities were also fading, and it said that he didn't have these deep offenses, and therefore, by saying Narayan, we know what happened. He was, even though he was meant to be taken to Yamaraj and suffer, the Vishnu Dutas came on the scene. And the Yama Dutas were shocked. Because they say, what are you doing here? This is such a sinful person. This doesn't make any sense. But this is the whole point of this pastime, is to show the power of the name, how it overrides everything, even sin. If we can chant without offense. So he didn't chant the pure name when he was saying Narayan, but he chanted Nam Abbas. Nam Abbas is like, so that if you say three stages, Nam Aparad, I'm chanting with offenses. Krishnadas Kaviraj says that can go on for many lives. Then we have to think, now what is the transition from Nam Aparad, offending the name, to Nam Abbas? At least where the offense has reduced to the point where the light of the name can touch us to some degree. Because the name, before the name fully appears, it first comes as a light. Nam Abbas. Abbas also means a glow or a light. So the light of the name can get in because some of the offenses have reduced. You can envision the offense or offenses as dark clouds in the sky. There's the sun of the holy name. This is a very nice image to always understand this whole tattva. There's a sun in the sky that's always shining. It's always glorious. It always gives heat. It always gives light. And then there's me down here on earth. So there's me and there's the shining sun. What is aparad? It is a self-produced dark cloud which doesn't allow me to feel or see the sun, even though it's there. And sins are like some haze, maybe some other clouds, but they're not as dark and not as powerful. You know, like when Indra sent his Samvartaka clouds to Vrindavan, it said that those clouds were so dark that even though it was daytime, it was pitch black. So this aparad is a very dense, dark cloud. It's within my own heart, but in this image, you can project it out as a cloud that blocks you from experiencing the sun, the light, the warmth, the power of the sun. So if that dark cloud, if we learn the art of not feeding it again and again and again, if it's fed, that's why we're warned of different things, because if it's feeding that dark cloud again and again and again, and then we'll never feel that power of the sun. Okay. So we'll begin with the first verse. Any comments or thoughts or questions? Let's just pause for a moment before we start. We'll chant the first verse together. Yes, Prabhu. We'll just take a couple maybe, just for the sake of time, but I want to also pause here and there because it's a lot of information, quoting a lot of things. And yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Wouldn't sinfulness be the tenth offense, maintaining material attachments?
Well, the 10 offenses are all offenses, nam aparad. So it's a sin of a certain power. That's what an aparad is. So you can call them sins in some way. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he makes a distinction. There are great obstacles and ordinary obstacles. So the great obstacles, of course, he's talking about aparad. And an ordinary obstacle is a sin. So the 10th offense, and many of the offenses, may look like just a kind of sin. But we'll see when we get to the 10 offenses, we'll also see how they're all actually about something else, those 10 offenses. You can also understand it in this way. A sin is because of our entanglement with something material. Right? You have some bad habit. You smoke cigarettes, drugs, or some addiction that you have. It's your interaction with matter, and you've become entangled in it. That's a sin. But an aparad is something is connected to transcendental objects or beings, God himself, even. So it's your relationship to something that's very divine and pure that can save you. That's an aparad. So that's one way of understanding the difference between. So all the 10 offenses are all 10 offenses, even though some may seem to be like sins. Sin's a different category. Yes, Prabhu, yes.
From Madhya Lila, it was verse 110, but what chapter was it?
So that is 21? Yes, 21.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, ladies' side, we have one, and then we'll go forward. My good wife.
It's just a comment, and maybe you can add to it, but that 10th offense is maintaining material attachments, even after understanding, to continue. So it's not so much that I have sins, but the willingness to create more seems more connected to the aparad, that there's a withholding from giving pleasure and love to Krishna.
Yes. Yeah, that 10th offense, in Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this is the worst offense. Even sometimes we hear the first one is the worst, that's also really, really, really bad. And 10th one is also really bad because it means that we're, like right now, when we all walk away, including myself, when we walk away from this today, of focusing on the name. And the 10th offense says in the Sanskrit that if you keep hearing about the glories of the name and still don't develop priti, love for the name, you don't make an effort to love the name, that is an offense. So at least we have to be on a journey, wherever we are in chanting, on a journey of, but I have to return to the name. Again, maybe I've even stopped completely. But I have to return. I want to love the name. If you keep that alive. Because we're hearing beautiful things, but if we keep hearing and do nothing, don't make little efforts, some little slight effort, then that's the 10th offense. So, you have a comment, Prabhu?
No, I'm just trying to clarify in my own head.
Okay.
So offense is consciously made with enmity or something.
Yes.
But then in Rupa Goswami's Pad's case with Kanja Krishnadas, he did not really fall into any of this category, yet it was offense.
Yes.
What is your opinion?
Yes, so that we'll maybe talk about that pastime a little bit later, but and what can be said is that Rupa Goswami cannot offend the holy name. That's for sure. So this pastime and many pastimes of pure devotees are lessons for us to be very careful. So even though he apparently offended Kanja Krishna Prabhu, but there was no offense, actually. But this is a great warning. That's why it said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his associates are performing bhajan lila. It's a lila, it's a pastime of being a devotee, bhajan. And it's for us to look at and see, look at this pastime, let me be careful. But Rupa Goswami can never chant offensive. He's an eternal associate. Srimati Radharani. So these stories sometimes are just really meant for the practicing devotee. Okay, so let's continue. So let's recite this first verse together. And here's the context. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Jagannath Puri. When he recites these verses, all one after the other, he's in Jagannath Puri. And he's staying at the home of Kashi Mishra. A little section of the home is called Gambir. Gambir means grave. It's a very simple... Anyone been to Gambir? So simple, right? It was just a stone floor. Lord Chaitanya was there. King Prataparudra recommended that Lord Chaitanya stay there because it was very close to the Jagannath temple, so he could take darshan of Jagannath. But it was quiet and serene and very peaceful. And Lord Chaitanya stayed there for the end of his life, for many years. And especially with two associates, his two most confidential associates, Ramananda Rai and Swarup Damodar. So this is the context of Lord Chaitanya reciting Shikshastakam. And Swarup Damodar kept a diary. So how do we have these verses? Swarup Damodar kept a diary. He wrote down the verses. Gave them to his disciple, who is Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das Goswami shared them with his disciple, Krishna Das Kaviraj, who wrote them in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this is how it's come down to us. So he also spoke these verses at different times in his lila before the end of his life, but they weren't all given in a sequence, and he didn't explain them. But there's times where he also spoke these verses. Only thing Lord Chaitanya composed of his own that was given. He gave two things, Lord Chaitanya. He gave the name in the seed form, and he gave Shikshastakam, 8 instructions on how that seed can sprout and develop into divine love for God. That's the guideline for the name is Shikshastakam, for chanting the name. And he felt that's sufficient. And of course, all of his followers and disciples were empowered by him to expand now on the Shikshastakam. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, all the writings of the Goswamis, these are all expansions of Shikshastakam. Because Lord Chaitanya gave these 8 verses, and there's unlimited knowledge and teaching within these 8 verses. So imagine in your mind the context. Lord Chaitanya is there with his 2 most intimate associates, and suddenly he's awake all night long, no sleeping, and he's just relishing what we talked about earlier, the sweetness of love for Krishna. And then from his heart, he relishes these verses, but he's also giving them as shiksha, instructions to all of those who follow him. So we can chant this first verse together. Cheto dapanam majanam bhava mahadevagni nirvapanam shri akharai vachandrika vitaranam vidya vadu jivanam anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipatam purnamrita svadanam sarvatma snaparam param vijayate shri krishna sankirtanam. Krishna Das Kaviraj says, anyone who chants these verses of Shikshastakam or just hears them, well, day by day, as the days pass, their love for Krishna will increase day by day. They will attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So here's the English translation Prabhupada gives. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. That chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities. It is the life and soul of all education. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. It gives a cooling effect to everyone and enables one to taste full nectar at every step. So contained in this verse are 7 effects of chanting. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that you really have to follow the crumb. Crumb means like step by step. What is the first effect? Put your focus there. If you put your focus on the first effect, then flowing from that, the second effect will come. Once you're situated in that second, because just like a flower, it's unfolding. The holy name is unfolding and giving more and more. And we're going to primarily focus on the first effect because it's already so special and wonderful, and everything else actually comes more easily after the first one is accomplished, because the first one means the purification of the consciousness. Cheto darpanam marjanam. Also, what we notice about this first verse, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is full of rasa, he's full of the sweetness, then what language is he using to express his teachings? What genre of... Huh? Sorry?
Sanskrit,
yes. The language is Sanskrit, but also the style. What kind of literary style is this? If you could... Huh? Romance? Think of... Metaphorical, poetic. This is poetry. Kavya. Poetry is the best language to express bhakti, because bhakti is very sweet and also very intimate. It's a shakti of the Lord that is... It's said that bhakti is the svarup, is the vilas of the svarup shakti. Svarup Shakti is Krishna's internal energy, and vilas means play. It is like Sanatana Goswami says this. It's bhakti is the play of the internal energy of God. It's very sweet, just like prema, just like Krishna himself. So the best language to use, that's why all of our acharyas, they wrote so many poems. Rupa Goswami collected so many poems. So you see, he's talking about moon rays and mirrors and a blazing fire and white lotus. What else? All this verse is full of poetic poetry. I have no taste for poetry, I have to admit. And many people today, so the acharyas, even though it's very poetic, when they give their purports, it's not so much filled with that rasa. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur just starts off with the fall of the jiva in his purport to this. It's like, okay, there's jiva tattva, there's maya tattva, there's the Supreme Lord, there's Mahavishnu's gland. You know, we start from way far off to understand actually what's being given. But kavya, poetry, is the language of bhakti. That's why all the advanced devotees speak in poetry. Poetry gives little hints. It's called dvani. Lord Chaitanya spoke with dvani, which is a suggestive meaning, like a hidden hint. Cheto darpana marjanam. The chitta is like a mirror that needs to be cleansed. There's great knowledge there, but he gives it in a kind of hint of an analogy. So it's better for us, many of us, because I have no rasa, I'm like a dry piece of wood, then I have to just hear, actually, what is the philosophy here? Prose. Prose is just ordinary, right? Prose is ordinary writing, prosaic rather than poetic. Just ordinary, just tell me. I used to, growing up, when I would take classes and they would have poetry, I always thought, I don't understand anything that's being said. I would read something and say, just tell me what it means. What does it mean? It's all just fluffy words. But dvani, Lord Chaitanya spoke in dvani. He gave these suggestive little hints of what things mean. And then all of his followers unpack these things for us. So following our acharyas, they don't begin with Cheto Darpana Marjanam. They first begin with an explanation of Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. That's where it starts. Param Vijay. So Jai means what? Victory, but not just victory, param vijay. Param means total, complete, topmost victory. That's explained what it means. It's significant. So it's nice. If there's two armies and they fight, then one side will be jai, victorious, and the other side will be jita, conquered. Right? But if one army defeats another, that's not yet total victory. Why? Because now the side who lost still resent, and they still have this tension and resentment, and as time passes, there may be another war, right? Some countries have been fighting forever. Why? Because you conquer, but they come back. So total victory means when one army defeats another, and the king of the victorious army then sends his representatives to that land to take over the government. And now it's under his control. So now he's become totally victorious. Not only did they win that small war, but they've taken over everything. So what does that mean for us when chanting? That means that the holy name, when we chant, we have to let the ear just hear the sound. The ear has to be conquered. But that's not yet total victory. Then it has to enter, the holy name has to enter into your pran. There's movement in the body, right? The pran. So the holy name, it's a power. So it first comes in through the ear, and as we get purified, it actually said to enter the pran. So it conquers the pran. That's not yet total victory. Then it enters the mind and conquers the mind. That's not yet total victory. Then it enters the atma. That is total victory. So the holy name eventually will completely conquer if we're dedicated to it and we learn how to chant purely. That's the biggest question. How to chant purely. So that's padam. That's not just jai. That's padam vijai. Total takeover. You know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with Prakashananda Sarasvati, he was a staunch sannyasi, Prakashananda Sarasvati. And Lord Chaitanya, they were attracted to him. They were attracted to two things, his beauty and his humility. And they could also see this is a very special personality. So they actually wanted him to join them. So Prakashananda Sarasvati said, you know, I have to tell you something. We could see you are a great soul. You appear to be very humble, very advanced. But why do you go out into the streets with, you know, men, women, and children, and you're dancing and singing? He called them bavuk. You know what bavuk means? Bavuk. You're sentimental. You're a sentimentalist. But you're a sannyasi. You should be like us. We're here studying Vedanta in concentration, Vedanta. So why do you do this? So Lord Chaitanya's response, he said, actually, you're not understanding properly what's happening. He said, my spiritual master, he told me, you are murka, you are a fool, you can't study Vedanta. You just take this name and chant. And he said, because I had complete faith in the words of my spiritual master, I just started chanting and chanting and chanting. And soon, the name just took over everything in my life. And so he said, I don't dance. The name is making me dance. I don't sing. The name is making me sing. I don't cry. The name is making me cry. All this is the name doing it to me. So you're saying, why are you going out in the street? I'm not dancing. But I can't help it. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went back to his spiritual master and said, what have you given me with this name? I'm losing myself. And his Ishvara Puripad, he also just laughed and said, yes, that is the nature of the Maha Mantra to do that. So now you continue to do so and you share it with everybody. This is the beginning of the Sankirtan movement, actually. Once the instruction came from Ishvara Puri, it was always part of the mission of Lord Chaitanya, but this is how the pastime unfolds. Once Ishvara Puri tells him, now you relish this name forever and give it to everyone. Sankirtan movement begins. Oh. So it was a total takeover. So this is Param Vijayate. And Sri Krishna. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna. So interestingly, we might wonder, well, this is the holy name, it's the Maha Mantra. Lord Chaitanya is saying, all glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Where's Radharani? Oh, but she's there in the word Sri. What is Sri? We know Lakshmi sometimes is referred to as Sri. Huh? Lakshmi is called Sri. Sri is feminine. It's the Shakti. So if you, just like we were saying, that in the spiritual world and transcendence, there are many dimensions that all exist eternally. So when the Supreme Lord and His eternal Goddess are worshipped in awe and reverence, that's called Lakshmi Narayan. And when that same Lakshmi Narayan are in the eternal dimension of intimate sweet love, that is Radha Krishna. So Srimati Radharani is here. There are nice descriptions of the meaning of the word Krishna. There are many. Krishna, we know, it can also, we say it comes from Karshana, which means to attract. He draws you. By his very nature, he draws the living entity. This is a deep point. Why do we have longing in our heart? Only because the nature of God is to attract. So we misinterpret the longing that we have in our heart and we try to satisfy ourselves with sense gratification or in some material way, and we always get defeated and never fulfilled. But the reason why it exists, there's a longing in the soul to return to Krishna, because his nature is to be attractive. We can't help it, no matter what you do. So everybody is attracted to Krishna, and a devotee means someone now who understands that and is now on the path to removing obstacles so they can unite with Krishna in love, in loving relationship. So Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Okay, this is a really important point. What is san? We talked about what it means. What does the word mean, san? Together, or it means complete. Complete, san kirtanam. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says this is important. What is complete kirtan? It has to be in its complete state to get the seven effects. Not just any kirtan can do it. He calls it sarvato bhavena kirtan. Kirtan in its complete state. It means three things. So those who are chanting, they need to have sambandha jnana. This is the first condition for a complete kirtan. And this is all such important information, because if we don't see the seven effects coming for years and years and years, we say, well, I'm doing kirtan. But here's what kirtan is in its complete form, which causes the seven effects to unfold. Sambandha jnana means it's a general thing. It can also be more mature. But in general, it means there is some knowledge of understanding. Who is Krishna? Who am I? Jiva tattva, Krishna tattva, Nam tattva. All these things are discussed. You have to know the tattvas. Maya tattva. This is sambandha jnana. It's understanding my relationship between myself and Prakriti, myself and God, myself and other living beings. So that's why we hear so much knowledge. Bhagavatam. This is why Bhagavatam is essential. So much tattva is there. So those who sit down to chant together, there should be some understanding of truth and of reality, and you bring that to the chanting. You're not just shut off, closed off from that and just repeating words. But oh my God, before you chant, you can say, Krishna, my dear Lord, I'm in this material world for so long. This is tattva. Somehow or other, I'm just falling away from you. The power of your name. You are in your name. All the devotees around me, we're here to make an offering to you. This is all informed knowledge coming from Guru Parampara. And then you chant. So first thing is sambandha jnana. Must be there. Second thing, this one may be a shocker. Because we think, oh my God, I don't know if I've... It's hard to find this kind of sangha. Because the second condition for sankirtan, real sankirtan, is for the chanters, there must be no offenses. No offense. So that's why we're talking about this subject, and we're focusing on this subject, because we want to be part of this chanting, real chanting, pure chanting. But just imagine, imagine being part of a kirtan. You know, there was a time where I think, three or four of our acharyas were all living at the same time. You know? Bhaktivinod Thakur, and he had his son Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and there was Gaurkishore Das Babaji, and I think Jagannath Das Babaji was also for a short time still alive. All four of them. Imagine their kirtan coming, sitting there, and then other sincere souls, kirtan. This will transform our hearts. The key to pure chanting, actually. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Harinam Chintamani, he talks about all these obstacles that come up when chanting, and then he gives the remedy for many of them. So a very important book. But the remedy is the same in almost all of them. It's to have very advanced sadhu sangha. If you can put yourself near, physically near, a person who chants purely. Why was Prabhupada so powerful to be in his association? No offense, no offenses. So at least we have to be on that journey of striving for that. There's no offenses, and there's those who are trying to clear the offenses. That's called Nam Abbas. And Nam Abbas is also very, very special. So don't think, overcoming offenses seems impossible. But if there's the stage of namaparad, offenses just continue because I'm not focused. I don't know what it really means. But then there's namabas. It's like that cloud. That dark cloud becomes a little more translucent. You can begin to see through it, even though it's still there. And then the light of the name can also touch your heart. And actually, Nama Bas is so powerful that one in that state can see a reflection in their hearts of the form of God, of the form of Krishna, in Nama Bas. So we're not even talking about pure chanting yet. So anyway, three conditions, Sambandha Gyan, without offense, and then Jiva Goswami also adds one to make it complete kirtan. He says, Sneha Samyukta, it must be with affection. Sneha, it must be with love. So think before kirtan with each other. Just remember these three things. Come, center yourself. Where am I? I'm in this material world. What is the name? Prepare yourself for a few moments first. Oh, Krishna, please, there are so many offenses in my heart. I pray that while chanting, I'm not feeding those offenses, but I'm focusing on hearing the sound of your name. That's Nama Bas. When you're just making an effort not to be offensive, you're chanting Nama Bas, but you have to be aware of what's happening. If you're totally distracted and you allow yourself to be distracted, that's Nama Parad. But if you're distracted by habit and keep returning to the name, that's not offense. Isn't that a nice point? Sometimes we hear in it, this is coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jaiva Dharma. He has a chapter called Nam Aparad, Nam Abas, Shuddhanam. So a good book to understanding some of these things. But he makes this beautiful point. We often hear that it is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. But then he gets a little more specific. It's an offense if you're deliberately distracted. In other words, you're chanting, whatever, take out the phone for a little bit, just let your mind just go in some other, so, and you just allow for all of it. That may be feeding an offense in the heart. But if you sit down, okay, there goes my mind. Oh, I was gone for a few minutes. Come back. That's not offensive chanting. That is not offensive. It's a different category because you're awake. Even if you fall asleep a little bit, you come back to awake and you come back to the name, you're making an effort. So, because our conditioned nature will be distracted. That's just what material life is. That's what material consciousness is. We have the habit. So that doesn't disqualify you for chanting in a way where great results can come. Okay. So those are the three conditions. Sun, that's all just the word sun. So you have the three there, Sambandha Gyan, without offense, and Sneha Samyukta. You are yukta. You have this connection to chanting with affection to the Lord, Sneha. So all of that implies you're with very advanced devotees, right? Because if this are the conditions. So this is, you know, Sankirtan implies that you have very strong sadhu sangha. You're seeking that. You want that. You put yourself in that situation. Okay, so the seven effects, we'll also describe those. This will be, the first one will give a little time. The other ones will go quickly. But before we begin, is there any thoughts or comments or questions on just... So we've only done Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. See how much of our acharyas have given us to understand what real Sankirtan is. Yes, Prabhu. Maybe somebody new will for the first, and then we'll come see if there's more time.
I was reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's mentioned that this is in Madhya Leela chapter 8, verse 166, purport. Prabhupada says, Radharani's earrings are the holy names of Krishna, as well as the hearing of his name and fame. Then in Madhya Leela, also chapter 8, verse 179, it says, Srimati Radharani's earrings, this is the verse, are the name, fame, and qualities of Krishna. The glories of Lord Krishna's name, fame, and qualities are always inundating her speech.
Jai. Beautiful. You see how it's unlimited. The name will reveal all these things to devotees. It's incredible. So thank you for sharing, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
I
You were mentioning different effects from chanting. I would say the main effect is cooling. Mm. That's what you can feel first, is that you're getting some relief from the blazing fire of material existence.
Yes.
So that you can feel that.
Yeah.
It's an actual feeling.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say you mentioned spurti. Mm. In some cases, spurti means you get a glimpse of your worshipful deity within the heart. That's also called spurti, but it doesn't stay continuously. Yeah. It's just, and when you get to that point, you know that you're getting close to developing love of God.
Yes. Jai. Thank you, Prabhu. Spurti. Yeah, there. This is an important word, actually. A realization, a vision, an experience that comes. Like you said, it may go away, but now we see something that can develop where it becomes a permanent vision in the heart. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you so much. This has been amazing. But it was just very encouraging, the point about the distractedness being out of habit.
Yeah.
And that not being considered an offense.
Yes.
I think personally, sometimes maybe I can think I'm being more offensive than I actually am.
Yeah.
Because there's like ignorance as to what is an offense and what is not an offense.
Yes.
So I think this is like kind of your point, that point being brought up is helping kind of understand like where I'm at, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's an important point. And like you said, offense is a very heavy thing, actually. We might even be wrong. Like you said, we could be wrong about ourselves. Oh, I'm so, you know, definitely we do things that can feed this deep, dense, dark cloud that's there in the heart. We have to see. We haven't talked about what it actually is yet. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say all the 10 offenses are really just one thing. So once we identify it, and we have to see certain actions can feed that, that's not good. But when you're just sitting down chanting and you're a little distracted, that's totally expected. This mind has been focused on matter in the material world for how many lives? So that's where it flows spontaneously. So now when you just try to hear a sound, how long can you do that? Oh, back, I'm gone, come back, I'm gone. So there has to be, it's a practice. It's a practice, yeah. Yes, one more and then we'll continue.
Thank you, Prabhu. On this point of no offense while chanting, in the act of chanting, you're describing distraction and how to come back. But what about one's daily activities or relations with devotees? If, you know, Vaishnava Aparad, and that could be going on outside of your little japa period.
Yes, that's true. And that's why all these things have to be considered. In fact, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, he says there are three kinds of distracted chanting. Three kinds of distracted chanting. Pramada, it's called. Inattention. Three kinds of inattention. And one of them is just what you're saying. It's not when you're chanting. But it's what your where your mind goes when you're not chanting. So that means just throughout our... That's why your whole life has to be organized in such a way which will help you chant purely. Imagine if we think about our lives like this. The essence of our path, of all the 9 items of devotional service, chanting is most important. So what if I just view my life and my interactions throughout the day and everything happening, this will interfere with my chanting properly. I better refrain. That's also part of what we have to do. And that's also in Shikshastakam, because the Shikshastakam will tell us how to act out there in the world, which will allow... So that when you chant, love will come. That's the third verse of Shikshastakam. Okay, so we'll continue. A little more. I know this is long, so hope you're all hanging in there. And we're going to also do a little chanting together. See, you hear all these things, and then it's nice to chant after hearing. We're reminded to focus. We're reminded of what we're doing. We're reminded of what's possible if we chant with attention and affection. Okay, so the first effect was Cheto Darpana Marjanam, to cleanse the mirror of the mind. So this is interesting language. What is this all? What does all this mean? What is the citta, and why is it compared to a mirror? What is the dust that's on that mirror? How to remove that dust? And then once the dust is removed, what is reflecting then on the citta? All these questions are there in this one effect. Cheto. So the citta, what is the citta? We have to go to Kapila Dev, third canto Bhagavatam, because he gives two verses that are the definition of citta. And it's very significant because even in those verses, he compares it to a clear lake. So here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says mirror. He says a clear lake. Same idea. It reflects. It's reflecting something. And if we're just focused in the material world, then what gets reflected in the citta? All material impressions, all material experiences, all material traumas, all material desires, all these things are reflected and live in the citta as samskars. So those have to be cleansed by just, Jiva Goswami is very clear about this, the way to start chanting, don't do anything some imagination or some visualization. It's the faith that the name and God are one. And so just let the ear hear. Right? That person, somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, what should we think about when we're chanting? He said, what is the question of thinking? You just hear, let your ear hear the sound. Don't involve your mind. So the mind has to surrender to the ear at first. Because the mind's going to get very busy very quick with the habit that we have. But the ear was just the sound. And of course, you want to bring some other things to it also, not just we hear, but like Jiva Goswami says, sneha, some affection, some feeling can also be there. And that's also in Shikshastikam. Okay, so citta. So if you want, just for your own reference, the two verses that define citta, this is third canto, 28th chapter, text 21 and 22. And I'm going to just mention some of the adjectives that describe what the citta is. So Kapila Dev says, yat tat sattvagunam svacham. The citta, first of all, we're not talking about the atma, the pure spirit. We're talking about the very first covering of the atma. Because this, in this context, he's explaining how the creation unfolds. First, there's Mahavishnu, right? And by the glance of Mahavishnu, the glance touches Pradhan. What is Pradhan? It is an invisible field of potential. This is how the creation begins. It's something. It's an energy of God, but it's totally invisible. Nothing you can see, taste, feel, touch, and it's just a field of potential. It's Prakriti in an even more subtle state. So he glances. So now there's contact between, not actual contact, because Mahavishnu never really touches even the material energy, but the glance touches Pradhan, and then the first element that comes is called, on the cosmic scale, it's called the Mahatattva. But the individual person also will unfold in the same way. All these elements start to come. And the individual, the beginning of the individual, of course, we had a previous, this is one of the creations, so we're coming, we already existed. But when the new creation begins, the living entity also, the first principle is the Mahatattva within the individual is called the Chitta. So that is it's the most subtle covering of the Atma. And what is it? It's said here to be, it's very highly sattvic. So it is of the material energy, but very highly sattvic. There's no movement in it yet. It's just like a pure screen that reflects. whatever comes before it. So Prabhupada calls it in these verses contaminated consciousness, because it's not spiritual. So very quickly, as the creation unfolds and as we unfold from the citta, the next thing to come is, it's called on the cosmic scale again also, it's called sutra tattva. It's pran. The pran enters the citta. So first there's some movement. Because before that there's no movement. The citta is just completely still, serene, like a lake that has no movement. And then some movement comes. And then all the... Now, what fills up this lake very soon because of material contact? That's what we were just talking about. And within ourselves, what fills up our citta very quickly? All material impressions, experiences, things we grab and taste and touch, they all enter into the citta in the form of samskars. A samskar means a subtle imprint that's in your citta. And they're not all of the same power. Right? Just like, for a moment, you know, everybody just look at that fan there, that first fan there. Okay, so you just looked at it. So when you looked at it, that, as soon as you took it in, it's called pratyaya. It means like a picture was just taken by your citta. And then you look away, it's still with you. For how long? Eternally, as long as you're in the material world. For every other birth, every other life, it never goes away. It takes the form, but because it's not such a powerful thing to think about or look at, we'll forget it. It's gone out of our conscious awareness, but it's still there as a samskar in the citta. But if something impactful happens to you, this is the devotee explanation of things like trauma. What's actually going on? You have some experience that deeply hurts you or affects you. Then that's a powerful samskar. And the question is, will you continue to feed it, to grow it stronger, to where it controls you, controls your life? It's a memory. So when you first see it, the term is pratyaya. And then when you turn away and forget of it, now it's in your citta, it's called the samskar, an impression. And like I said, they're not all the same degree of power and effect. But there's one ancient samskar that's very deep and is even hard to feel or perceive, and that is called aparad. So that is what an aparad actually is. There's many clouds of samskars, many different things, but there's a deep, fundamental, ancient one. But anyway, all these are all the particles of dust. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example of the citta needs to be cleansed by the name, it's the cleansing of all these samskars. Samskars is everything. It's our desires. They come from the sub... let me read this little quote from Prabhupada. About this. Okay, this is Prabhupada's comment on Chaito Darpana Marginam. He says, the citta is like a mirror. This is from Science of Self-Realization, that little book. The citta is like a mirror, also like a camera. It takes pictures day and night, and keeps them all in an unconscious state. Psychologists know this fact. The citta is covered with so many pictures, impressions. We do not know when it has begun, but because there is material contact, our real identity is covered. Therefore, chaito darpana marginam, one has to cleanse this dust from the mirror of the heart. So we're like, these are our two cameras. These two eyes, everything you see goes in. You just took a picture. It's with you for your whole material existence. But only some of them are active right now. That's why this particular personality, we're not experiencing all the samskars, just a few coming into our consciousness. Because if we were to receive all of them from all our past lives, you know, maybe we were an animal. I don't see any, you know, some scars of a giraffe manifesting right now in this life for myself. You know, I don't suddenly try to get my neck to stretch and eat some leaves because that's gone. But it's there, but it's in a dormant state. Prabhupada says the unconscious, also the subconscious. So you can also understand the citta in that way. It is like the subconscious. It's a very big thing filled with samskaras. But only a few of them are active in this life. That's me right now. A few of are manifesting. But everything I take in is adding more to the pool. The whole pool of it is called, there's also a term for that, ashay. Ashay means the whole, Prabhupada calls it stockpile. The whole stockpile. So everything you take in goes back into this pool, and how all those in the big pool combine and they interact, and that causes your next life. That causes what your next form is going to look like. That causes what your next desires that will come out. Usually it's very linked to the previous life, but it also gets mixed into a whole pool. Okay, so this is citta. And here's a couple other words just to describe the citta. Svachatvam. This is text 22 from what I was sharing. Svachatvam means clarity. Avikaritvam, freedom from all distraction, Prabhupada explains. Shantatvam, serenity. Iti chetasaha. These are characteristics of the chetasaha. The cheta is the chitta. Okay. So removing is what we're talking about. The name removes it, but with all these things we're mentioning, in good sadhu sangha, with a focus, hearing the sound vibration, it begins to dissipate the dust of these samskaras. And once it's finally cleansed, then, now you have just this clear lake or you have a clear mirror, then what gets reflected in it? This is such a nice point. Once it's cleansed, then the citta is like returning back to its original state. Remember we mentioned how things come in order. First there's a pure citta. It's pure, sattvic, very sattvic. Not spiritually pure, but materially pure. Means sattvagun. So returning it back to original state, and now you continue chanting. You continue saying, it's been cleansed now, but now you're hearing the name. So then the first thing that gets revealed, reflects in that citta, is the form of Krishna. You're not seeing Krishna face to face as if he was standing before you, but in your heart, you catch a reflection of the form of Krishna. This is called Bhagavat Bimba Grahitvam. Bhagavat Bimba. Bimba means reflection of Bhagavan in the purified citta. So imagine you're chanting, focusing on overcoming offenses in the mood of Shikshastakam, a grateful heart, serving the devotees. You start chanting, as you mentioned, Prabhu, just a nice effect is there. You start to feel a certain serenity, coolness that comes upon you, and you continue chanting. Your heart is getting cleansed and soft, and then within your heart, Krishna appears. A reflection of his form is shown to you. That will only cause you to want to chant always at that point. You'll always be chanting. You're talking to somebody, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Maybe not out loud, but even in your heart, Prabhupada. The devotees are always chanting. How is it possible to always chant? It doesn't mean they're literally always audibly chanting. Even at sleep, Prabhupada says, you can chant, chanting will continue. Because it's so deep. This is now, we're talking about a spiritual samskar. Permanent. Most powerful. The spiritual samskars just totally dissolve all material samskars. So we're still talking about a samskar, an effect, an impression in the consciousness. So once it's Krishna, Krishna Nam, you never want to stop chanting. So another thing that's reflected, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his notes on his comment on this point also of Cheto Darpana Marjanam, he said five things gradually become reflected in the purified citta. And these are the five subjects of the Bhagavad Gita. You start to also see your own Atma. And it's like the Atma seeing itself reflected in the citta. The Atma is not directly seeing this world. It's seeing through a filter called the citta. That's why we see things in a very subjective way. Or even you may take some drugs, and you start to see that the trees are moving and things like that. Or you have a very high fever and you may see even, it looks like the ground is like waves. So those things aren't happening, but they're happening inside of you because the filter is the citta. You have a filter, like a screen, and according to what's going on with that, you'll perceive things not in their true form. So, but in this, when the consciousness gets cleansed and the citta is free from all the dust and all this dirt that's there, then the Atma sees itself reflected in the citta. That's very interesting. So the Atma, you start to see Prakriti in its true form. You see really what is the material energy. Not as we see it like this, but you see Prakriti, how it acts. You see Kala, you see time. What does that mean? See time. You see the power of, we think about time sometimes. We think about, oh, time's passing. But somehow this is a perception of being able to see how time is acting on all living beings at every moment. You see it. You see karma. You see karma acting, how it's controlling. And you see Paramatma. Because Paramatma is also there. But if you're chanting Krishna Nam, then instead of seeing Paramatma, you see Krishna. Okay. Just a little time check here. Okay, so I'm going to leave a little time. We'll continue. I won't give too much time to the other effects, but I'll mention them quickly before we end, and then we'll do a little chanting together. Yeah. Okay. So then after Chaito Darpana Marjanam, Bhava Maha Devagni Narvapanam, then the burning in the heart, the burning of this material world is that feeling of the burning, it's extinguished. And Prabhupada says in his comment to this point that if you're in a forest, it's caught on fire. This is the material world. He said, and if you send, what will your fire brigade do for that? It's too big. They come with their little buckets of water, he says, and they're trying to put out the, or you come with a hose, but the whole forest is on fire. What will your little attempts do? Therefore, the only way is a big cloud has to come above the forest and torrents of rain, volumes and volumes for a long time, then the fire can go out. So he's comparing that torrents of rain to the holy name. Then it can go out. But your little attempt to bring your buckets of water and a blazing fire, a whole forest, you cannot do it. So that's the next effect. Then following that, Shreya Karaiva Chandrika Vitaranam, another beautiful poetic image. So imagine the white lotus is in your heart. Why is it white? Because your consciousness has been cleansed already. So white means purity. So the white lotus now has appeared in your heart, and as you chant, it's like moonbeams, because it's said to be a lotus flower, a white lotus that actually grows in the moonlight. Most flowers grow in the sunlight, but this is a very special flower. In the moonlight, in the cooling moonbeams of the holy name, now that flower will begin to bloom, which means, and Shreya, all auspicious things come from this in your life. So it's not just now material suffering's over, but now comes the positive. A flow of all auspiciousness will be felt and experienced and come into your life. Vidya Vadu Jivanam. Vidya means transcendental knowledge. Vadu means bride or wife, chaste wife. Jivanam, the life of. What does that mean? So, Vadu, who is this lady who has appeared now at this stage? It's Vadu, a very chaste bride. Who's the husband? Is Nam, Krishna. So the wife has appeared, the wife of knowledge. So this, we shouldn't understand this word knowledge to mean like she's coming to give some philosophy. She's now revealing the knowledge of your relationship with Krishna. So this is actually Radharani. Vidya Vadu Jivanam. She's very chaste to her husband, Krishna. In this context, she's like Krishna's husband. means she's always with her husband. So if the nam is appearing, then along with the husband, the wife is always there, and she's thinking, you know, yeah, she's appearing at this stage, and she's also revealing the knowledge of one's relationship. So that means, what is my relationship with Krishna? Servitude, parental love, friendship, romantic, shanta, just awe and reverence, it's revealed. Not that you have your form or anything like that, but something is shown to you there. Then, anandam buddhi vardhanam. So, point here that Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes is that the atma inherently has ananda, but it's a very small, minute ananda. The atma itself has pleasure. We know it's satchit ananda. But this pleasure, now from the name, this ananda is like a flow of the Lord's sweet energy comes into the atma, and more, it's like you're in an ocean now, and you're getting tossed by the waves of unending, increasing ananda. So you inherently have your own ananda, but that's only like if you can realize that you're an atma, that will be accompanied by a blissful feeling, but not love for Krishna. That's a whole other thing. You just realize, I'm a pure spiritual being. So somebody may have that experience. That's the ananda they're talking about with satchit ananda. But the real ananda is a flow of Krishna's svarup shakti coming into you. So sarvatma snapadam, this is the last. This last stage represents prema, pure love for Krishna. It's like a full bath, snan. Sarvatma snapanam means to take the full, everything bathes in this spiritual energy. Everything. So that means all the samskaras we talked about, and the chitta itself melts. This is how it's put by Rupa Goswami. In this stage, your chitta, it's like the last, it's very close to the soul, very sattvic, that chitta melts, is gone. And so this stage represents that you're actually now in your spiritual form, directly serving Krishna, prema. So you've given up this material body, material mind. Okay, so that was a quick. So the next session, we're going to cover verses 2 and 3. And we'll do a little chanting now. Is that okay? Like that. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to actually ask my friend if he's able to chant. So he'll play harmonium. Yeah, we're going to. Right here, yeah. Yeah, so asking my friend Ramai Prabhu to chant because he chants so nicely. But we'll all try to see what's touched you, what's affected you, and allow that to remain as you chant. This is the heart of our practice. If this is done correctly, then actually everything else falls in place. As long as we chant and we try to avoid some of the offenses, which we'll also talk about in the next session. So we'll chant. I can play if nobody else.
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tiname Namaste.